Last time on Paying Dividends, we talked to legislators as they mulled over Governor Mike Dunleavy's austerity budget. It isn't going over smoothly, even among members of his own party. Now he's taking his fiscal plan on the road with stops in communities from Nome to Fairbanks to Kenai. Members of the State House Finance Committee held their own dueling meetings. And as Alaskans got up close and personal with their elected representatives, what's the message? I'm Rasha McChesney, and this is Paying Dividends.
Welcome to Alaska. Here's $1,000.
Well, it's about time, but why?
When you collect that check, it is your share as an owner of the resource.
And, you know, people are like, do you really get paid for living there? And you're like, yeah. You know, you look back and you're like, dang, what'd I spend my PFD on?
If we don't make a change in the permanent fund, it's gone in a couple of years. It's just gone.
My goal is to pay a full PFD and to go back and make sure that Alaskans get the PFD that was also cut.
On this episode of Paying Dividends, Alaskans weigh in. We'll hear reporters from Juneau to Bethel in southwest Alaska, where Governor Mike Dunleavy and members of the legislature landed in the last week. And they were taking feedback on the budget, PFDs, the state's constitution, and really whatever else was on people's minds. And the reception they got was, in a word, mixed. There were protests at nearly every stop on the governor's tour. In Fairbanks, nearly 400 protesters showed up. In Nome, a woman was detained by police. And the governor and lawmakers heard from people who didn't want to see their dividends cut, but they also heard hours of testimony from people who opposed dramatic state budget cuts to things like education and ferries. We'll start in Juneau, where members of the House Finance Committee kicked off a weekend of meetings with a three-hour listening session. Andrew Kitchenman is the Capitol correspondent for KTOO and Alaska Public Media. Hi, Andrew.
Hi, Rasha.
Andrew, there are two sets of meetings happening in the state right now, correct?
Yeah. What we've had is in late February, Governor Mike Dunleavy said that he was going to go out to the public. We didn't get details about that for a while, but a couple weeks after that, the House Finance Committee announced that they would have meetings that they really have never done before, which is public meetings with both presentations and testimony and public testimony out in communities.
Can you describe for me the difference between these, committee meetings that the House is having and Governor Dunleavy's meetings?
Yeah. So the House meetings, more of a traditional meeting in public testimony format where you have brief presentation and then a kind of open-ended forum for people to voice their takes, their responses to the budget. The governor's meetings was a bit more of an emphasis on the presentation side of it and a bit less openness on the public side of it, and that's because a private organization, Americans for Prosperity, Alaska, the Alaska chapter, was hosting the meetings along with the Alaska Policy Forum.
Right. So this special interest group, Americans for Prosperity, funded these roadshow stops for Governor Dunleavy. And we'll hear more about that from some other reporters in the state in a few minutes. But you reported on this not too long ago. What's the deal over there? What's that all about?
Yeah, I think part of why it became controversial is that it required tickets, and initially they were saying that you would have to present ID, which raised concerns. But also you had to sign a sort of terms and conditions essentially saying that you couldn't wear campaign clothing, you couldn't bring a sign to the meeting. Americans for Prosperity says basically that there's a legal reason for this, which is that they are a nonprofit and they can't be seen as condoning partisan political activities. But it's a little odd for a public official. I talked to John McKay, he's a lawyer who works a lot with media organizations and is an advocate for open public access to the government. And he said he had never seen anything like this before and really questioned almost the legality of it. He was because the governor's office initially announced it as being a public meeting.
Okay. And what was the primary message behind the testimony at that House meeting that you attended in Juneau?
Yeah. So I went to the first of them on Friday night. And overwhelmingly, this is Juneau. This is the capital city. This is the place, the seat of government. And so if people don't work in government, they often have friends who do. And I'm not saying that it's purely a self-interest thing. I mean, you heard a lot of really earnest, heartfelt appeals to people who are directly affected by government services. People spoke really passionately. One of them was Leslie Lyman, who is a retired teacher.
I picture it kind of like a body. If you cut education, well, there go the brains, okay? You cut the ferry system and the infrastructure, there go the legs. You cut all the other support systems, there go the hands and the ability to participate in our state.
You also you heard some call-in testimony as well?
Yeah. On the last couple of days, I've been spending a lot of time both inside the Capitol and at home listening and watching to call-in. And so you get more of a cross-section of the state. It's a lot of the rural areas because it's areas that didn't have were sort of specifically people were invited to testify from areas that didn't have any of these public meetings last weekend. And I think you heard a contrast. You both heard the voice of the governor's supporters. They were in a minority, but they were vocal and passionate. And you also heard people there was a subtle difference between some of, I think, the callers from rural Alaska and the Juneau testifiers, which is the Juneau testifiers, they were very upfront in saying that they're willing to pay for government services. And they cited multiple ways of doing that. They cited making changes to the oil tax system, but also advocated for an income tax and for reductions to PFDs. In rural Alaska, you hear less of the talk of reductions to PFDs and some people who are actively supporting a larger PFD.
Why is that? And are there alternatives that the legislature really isn't kind of actively considering this session?
Well, it's somewhat speculative, but I would say that Juneau is one of the higher income communities in the state. And so as a share of people's incomes, permanent fund dividends are not as high a share. In parts of rural Alaska, they can be a very high share. I did a story a couple of years ago about the Kuzilvac census area, like Hooper Bay and Emonic, and it can be really at the center of people's lives. I think one of the factors is that some of the legislators who've advocated for new sources of revenue, like an income tax, in the past, have been in the House majority the last 2 years, which passed an income tax 2 years ago that did not advance in the Senate. But they're now part of a bigger caucus that includes a lot more Republicans, including some very conservative Republicans. And I think that has decreased, at least on the House side, the talk of sources of revenue outside of reducing PFDs.
As this budget and these sort of proposals for what to do with the PFD are taken on the road, can you talk a little bit about the role of this kind of public testimony in Alaska politics?
I think that it's unique. The legislative information offices where people go to testify, there is nowhere else in the country that has anything like that. For really since the first day I came to Alaska in 2016, I've been struck with how intently lawmakers pay attention during public testimony. They're very interested in particular when their own constituents speak. So they like to ask exactly where people are from. And we're seeing that again. And I think that will weigh heavily on lawmakers.
That was Andrew Kitchenman, our state government reporter, talking about the two different budget roadshows touring the state in the last week or so. On the Kenai Peninsula, south of Anchorage, residents got to send a message to Governor Dunleavy's budget team and the House Finance Committee within a few days of each other. Shaylin Cochran is a news reporter and host at KDLL in Kenai. Hi, Shaylin. How are you?
I'm well, Rasha. How are you?
Oh, pretty good. Hearing a lot of news out of the Kenai this week. You covered both a House meeting on the budget and then the Dunleavy administration's meeting, right?
Yeah, the House Finance Committee brought their tour to Soldotna over the weekend and saw a packed house there to take testimony for 3 hours about the budget, and then followed that up on Monday with a slightly different kind of meeting featuring the Governor Dunleavy and some of his staff. And he was actually around Kenai all day on Monday giving speeches and doing interviews and that kind of thing.
3 hours of testimony at a House meeting. How many people showed up? Was there a big difference in crowd size between those two meetings?
Huge difference in crowd size. The meeting for the House Finance Committee was at the Soldotna Regional Sports Center. They took over a conference room, which holds in excess of 250 people, and it was standing room only. It was very packed in there, and lots of testimony. At least 80 people testified.
Okay. So that House meeting on the budget was really just to take public testimony in person then? No presentations?
Aside from, you know, introducing dignitaries and some formalities at the very beginning of the meeting, it was basically 3 straight hours of tell us what you think in 3 minutes or less.
What was the contrast between those two meetings, really?
Well, I mean, the purpose, I think, is the biggest contrast in that, like I said, the House Finance Committee meetings are purely there for public testimony. The governor's meeting felt very much like a sort of like a small campaign stop sort of an event. He's very much pushing his plan for the budget and would like to have people on board for that plan, of course. And this is a way for him to try to do that.
And you heard from some protesters as well, didn't you?
There were some protesters at the meeting Monday night. They had, of course, there's been a lot of protests about education cuts all over the state. Kenai's no different. That was a big thrust of the comments and the feeling among protesters. Another part of that, though, was sort of, again, looking at how this meeting was structured versus the House Finance Committee meetings. This meeting was at a private lodge in Kenai. It was put together by a political action committee that's famously funded by the Koch brothers, and folks were not too happy about that.
That idea that a special interest group, Americans for Prosperity, is funding these meetings, has that come up a lot in Kenai?
It has come up a lot. People were interested to know what the status was of this meeting, because when it was first announced, it was public. And then, well, it's not public. There's limited seating. Well, no, you actually need a ticket. You need to be on a list, and there's not going to be just open questions. They would let you submit a question, and then there was a few minutes towards the end of the evening. Altogether, that event ran about an hour and a half, and most of that was just a straight presentation. They did take some questions throughout the evening, but they were, you know, written down and vetted and all that sort of thing. It wasn't just face-to-face Q&A.
What's the dichotomy between people who want budget cuts and people who are willing to give up their PFDs? And is there anything beyond that?
Well, what I heard a lot of between the two meetings is folks who have a lot of concerns about the proposed budget cuts are quick to point out that there are some revenue questions that they would like addressed too. Whereas folks who seem to be in support of the governor's budget feel that there is a spending problem. So I would say that is a bit of a difference, is you have a lot of folks who are ready for a look at perhaps some new taxes, some changes in oil tax credits and those sorts of things. And another group of folks who did elect the governor who want to see that plan taken through. What was curious to me is that the overwhelming majority of comments at the public testimony session for House Finance were not in favor of the governor's budget. It was a very, very small handful of people who spoke at that meeting who were in favor of the governor's budget and were not in a place where the governor had much trouble winning the election on the Kenai Peninsula. So that was curious to me.
Shailen, did I miss anything? Is there anything else that you noticed that you think is important for people to know?
One thing that I hear, no matter who I talk to, is that people are glad to be having this conversation. They realize it's a very important conversation to have, and they're happy that the House Finance Committee was here to have it. They were happy the governor was here to have it. Well, some people were happy the governor was here to have it. But the fact that we're talking about this, is at least one thing people can agree on.
That was Shailen Cochran, reporter and host at KDLL in Kenai. In Bethel, at least 50 people showed up to a House Finance Committee meeting last week. KYUK, and Alaska Energy Desk reporter Christy Schallenberger was there. Hi, Christy.
Hey, Russia.
What did people say? What was your big takeaway?
I think the biggest takeaway was everyone was against the Dunleavy budget. I was waiting for someone to speak up for it, but here in the YK Delta, they depend so much on state funding for a lot of services. And the biggest sentiment that I got was, we would rather have these fully funded services than a full PFD. And PFDs are a huge deal here too. Like, everyone needs, everyone really depends on their PFD to buy like a new snow machine or a fishing boat or something like that, especially because jobs and economic development here is pretty stagnant compared to other areas of Alaska. So reducing the PFD is a huge deal here, but cutting services that everyone, that a lot of people depend on here, is also a huge deal. And the consensus coming out of that meeting was, we would rather take the smaller PFD than see the services that we need cut.
Okay, and listening to that meeting, it sounds like one resident, Susan Taylor, had something important to say about that, yeah?
Oh, yeah. And she got the crowd going, which I thought was pretty significant and pretty representative of the sentiment that was running through the crowd at that hearing.
That $3,000 deal, that's campaign promise, right? That's a campaign promise, but it got turned into a bargaining chip. Am I right?
Yeah, you're absolutely right.
Okay, it got turned to a bargaining chip. Right. Say this happens, and we get our $3,000, even the big families where it's multiplied out, these cuts are going to cost us more than what this check is. Yep. He's throwing us a cookie in exchange for a meal. Okay?
Okay, so it sounds like what Susan is saying is pretty representative of how the people who testified viewed the idea of a trade-off between dividends and budget cuts. Will they accept one over the other? Do they think that dichotomy is necessary?
I would say the sentiment is they would like both, but they'll take the lower PFD. And I would also say that they are presented with this dichotomy. Like, this isn't something that they came up with themselves. Politicians have come in and said, this is what we're offering. And so they're trying to pick which one will hurt us least.
Which budget cuts are raising the most concern there?
The biggest ones, Medicaid, power cost equalization, and school funding, including the Head Starts, are the biggest concerns. The school districts are going to take a really big hit, which they've told me in previous, the superintendents and have told me in previous interviews, that they're not going to be able to absorb those cuts. LKSD, the Lower Kuskokwim School District, is our biggest school district here. And they're looking to have to build and move two schools because of climate change. One is Newtok. Newtok, the whole village, is moving to its new site in McTarvik. And then Napakiak, which is about 12 miles, I believe, south of Bethel, is dealing with very rapid erosion, and they're in danger of losing their school in a matter of months.
Did anyone have suggestions for how the state can raise more revenue and get itself away from spending more than it makes?
I think several people testified in favor of an income tax. They testified, they asked why not relook at how we tax oil industries. The Donlin mine, the proposed Donlin mine, is something that came up as an extraction industry. People here have told me it's also one way to wean off a little more on state funding. So when something like this happens, it wouldn't hit the region as badly.
And is there anything else that came up during that meeting?
Yeah. So Dan Winkleman, he's the CEO of the Yukon Kuskokwim Health Corporation, which is a Native-owned corporation and the largest healthcare provider in the YK Delta. He brought up the issue of tribal sovereignty and how a lot of people, especially Alaskans, misunderstand the relationship that Alaska Native tribes have with the state and federal government.
Many people do not understand why Alaska Natives have a special trust relationship with the federal government and are treated differently than any other group of Americans. It is not as frequently thought because of our race. Instead, tribal people receive special considerations because of our political status as members of sovereign tribal governments.
And that's something that Representative Tiffany Zolkuski, who is heading the very new Tribal Affairs, Special Committee on Tribal Affairs, wants to address, is to make people aware of the very different relationships, the legal relationships, the compacts, the treaties that Alaska Native tribes hold with the state and federal government. And I think they view these budget cuts as another way to hurt Alaska Native communities even more because of that lack of understanding. And that's a big thing with the Village Public Safety Officer program. You know, cutting that program would be pretty devastating here. Villages are already struggling with very little to no law enforcement presence.
Christy, thank you so much for your time.
Thank you, Russia.
While protesters showed up all over the state at Governor Dunleavy's meetings, things escalated in Nome. When Dunleavy's budget team landed there on Wednesday, they were greeted at the airport by Brenda Evac. Evac, according to KNOM, confronted the governor, shouting, "What do we do when our lands are threatened? We stand our ground." Evac was detained by Nome police and led away in handcuffs, but was released in time to attend the governor's meeting later that afternoon. There, another woman, tribal leader Melanie Banky of Kowarik, objected to Americans for Prosperity's conditions for the meeting. Emily Hofstetter is a reporter at KNOM in Nome. Hello, Emily.
Hey, thanks for having me.
So you got to see Governor Dunleavy's administration and their sort of budget roadshow. When did he and his team get in?
So I was actually outside covering the protest, which began at around 4 p.m. Just before 4 p.m., there were people starting to trickle in the open lawn area. We call it Anvil City Square, right outside of Old St. Joseph's Church. So I was on assignment covering that protest at 4. The event was supposed to start at 4:30. And so I actually didn't see Governor Dunleavy go in and start his event. I actually ended up being late because we didn't see him. So, but, you know, his the way that he was received, you know, at that event, you know, I was there, of course, covering a protest. So the people that I was with at the time, you know, were not really in favor of the event. A lot of people were, you know, upset that the AFP was involved with this and they were protesting the Koch brothers. But there were probably at the initial start of the event before it was realized that people could come in and listen without registering. There were probably 40 people that were there. They weren't at capacity.
So there were people sort of outside of the event protesting who maybe didn't realize that they could get in and watch without a ticket.
Correct, because that's what they were told a few minutes before, maybe like 4:20 p.m. You know, it got around through word of mouth that people could go inside. I went in and spoke with a spokesperson from AFP, and they said, yes, we are allowing people to come in. They don't have to register. They just can't be disruptive. They couldn't hold signs and they couldn't be interrupting the governor's presentation, but everyone was allowed to come in and sit down.
Okay. And I want to go back for a minute to Melanie Banky. Can you tell me who she is?
She's the president of Kowarik, which is a tribal consortium. They represent, I think, over 20 tribes in the Bering Straits and broader area.
And you were saying she kind of went off script and let everybody else off the script with her. Did you see what happened?
So she had been sitting towards the back of the audience. She just stood there very quietly, very patiently, with her hand raised. Dunleavy and the AFP staff said, "Oh, you know, we have a card." She was offered a card. But she, you know, she continued to sit there with her hand raised. Audience members began to point quietly to her, and, you know, everyone was just silently pointing. It started with a group of six people in the back, you know, pointing at Melanie, and then more people began to join in and just silently pointing, kind of creating this image that was a little hard to ignore. So as they finished these answered questions, then Dunleavy approached her again and asked if she would like to speak.
Thank you, Governor Dunleavy. I'm Melanie Banky. I'm speaking to you as a mother, a lifelong Alaskan,
and also as the president and CEO of CORE, I have some suggestions for you. Just first of all, in terms of process, I'd like to invite you back, and CORE could actually fund your travel, because I, for example, wasn't even aware if I would be able to be allowed in here because of the group that's sponsoring your trip and is hosting this visit. There was some confusion about whether or not we had to agree to have our rights for use of our image be signed away. There's a saying, when in Rome, and so I'd like to use that. So when in Rome, the protocol typically is not to be exclusive of who's allowed to come and access our elected officials. I'm sure we've got a good variety of Democrats and Republicans in here, but typically, when people come to know our political leaders, there isn't this question around who's allowed in and who's allowed to address you.
How was the administration's message received?
I would say most of the people that were asking questions were fairly critical of the budget or just neutral, wanted to know what the governor's plan was, you know, in light of this or that. Most of the topics of conversation, education was huge. I would probably put education as the thing people seemed most concerned about, but public safety was also a huge concern as well, particularly cutting the VPSO program. So if there were people that were very in favor of his budget cuts, they might have been in the audience and just not as vocal.
Okay. Emily, thank you so much for your time. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you.
Now that they're back in Juneau, members of the House say the testimony they heard at their meetings bolsters the case for reducing dividends to pay for government services. And they may try to use that as leverage in their negotiations with the Senate and the governor as they try to reach a budget compromise. And that's it for this episode of Paying Dividends. Thank you to Robin at KUAC in Fairbanks. This podcast is a production of KTOO and Alaska Public Media. It's edited by Jennifer Pemberton and Annie Feit. If you like what you hear, rate us, review us, or tap interesting in NPR One so more people can find the show. We're also online at ktoo.org/paying dividends. I'm Rasha McChesney. Thanks for listening.